Hi, it's Patrick Cox here, and in this World in Words podcast, we start with a warning and a question. The warning is...
there is some bad language in this week's podcast, so if you're riding around with children and listening, you might not want to have them listen to this one. So turn it off. No, better yet, listen to our backlog, last week's podcast. It's great. Singing, accents, take a listen.
See how I asked Nina Pulzucki to deliver the bad news? More from her later. Oh, the question. Yes, the question. What is the Lebanese mother tongue? Here's a hint. It's not a language in the strictest sense. Chew on that, why don't you? And while you're chewing, I'll give you a taste. Wait a minute. How can I do that if you're chewing? I'll give you a taste, nonetheless, of where, aside from Lebanon, we're going today. The Northern Plains, the Dakotas, where a few people, just a few people, speak Lakota.
If you speak the language, then you are an Indian.
No.
Of course not.
Okay, what if you don't speak the language? Are you suddenly not an Indian?
No.
Who are you?
No.
You're still a native, but no.
Okay, how about if you speak the language, but you also shop at Walmart and you drive a big American truck? Are you more or less of an Indian?
Depends on the kind of truck.
Maybe more.
Those and more existential questions regarding the Lakota language and culture, they're coming up a little later on. Okay, so the Lebanese mother tongue. I'll leave it to Dalia Mortada to explain. She visits Beirut a lot. She's not there right now, as it happens, in the aftermath of some horrible violence. But in the most recent time she went with a tape recorder for us, and in her previous visits, she's been struck by exactly how people speak in the three main languages that they use in Lebanon: Arabic, English, and French. Now, lots of countries, of course, lots of cities are multilingual. But the difference in Beirut is that people speak these multiple languages concurrently. Here's Dalia.
This high-end organic farmers market in Beirut is buzzing with activity. Just trying to pay for juice, I have to switch back and forth from English to Arabic.
It was how much in
32 انت اعطيتيني 75 فبدك مني 43
ايوه
ما معي الوفه اعطيتيني الوفه فقدي بدل 40 بدك تضلك مني ولا اقل.
Pia Boukhater is at the market with me. She's a creative writer based in Beirut, and she met with me at the market to talk about living in this mishmash of languages.
So when I'm interacting with people, like buying things, I'm trying to bargain. I think I'm just used to it when I'm here in Lebanon in Arabic. I rarely switch. I do often try and figure out what the green leafy thing in question is. Like, oh, is this the same as that in English? And then the word in French comes up and I'm like, no, I don't know in French. Like, please stop making this difficult.
Multilingualism, the way Pia knows it, is not uncommon in Beirut. Many people hear code switch in varying degrees, says linguist Lubna Dimachki.
It's like when you combine two languages in one sentence or in the whole interaction. So when people do this, there are... Merci.
Catch that, merci. Dimachki seamlessly uses the French word to say thanks to our waiter. Dimachki is considered francophone, meaning her dominant second language is French. But that's not the only reason she used the French merci. In Lebanon, hellos, thank yous, and how are yous are often said in French. Arabic is the core language, but kids are taught in English or French at school. French and English language schools have been around since the 1800s, when Catholic and Anglican missionaries arrived in the region. Then, after World War I, Lebanon was ruled by the French until the 1940s. But another linguist, Lina Shouedi, says the regular mixing of the three languages in everyday life actually didn't happen until much later.
My father, who was educated and he went to school and he knew both French and English, absolutely hated the code switching.
Shouedi's dad's generation just communicated in Arabic all the time. Shouedi, who went to school in the 80s, code switched.
My father would say, just when you start your sentence with a language, just stick to it. Don't switch to another language.
Back at the market, Pia agrees with Shouedi's dad. She's not crazy about the idea that people should be expected to know English or French.
What if you don't know the other two extra languages that come in a country? It's in one way or another, it's like linguistic racism.
Arabic is the core language of Lebanon, she explains. English, and even more so French, were imposed through colonialism and occupation, and they're remnants of that complicated history. But linguist Dimachki sees all this code switching in a different light. The way people code switch in Beirut is unique. It's not necessarily determined by age or ethnicity, she says. And it's not relegated to home or school or the juice stand at the market. Multilingualism is everywhere. That's what makes Beirut different from cities like Barcelona, Jerusalem, or LA. Like, a person in LA might speak Spanish at home and English at work. But in Beirut?
They are not foreigners. They are all Lebanese talking with Lebanese, so why all this code switching? You'll never see two French speaking to each other in German or in Spanish or in Chinese.
And yet, that's exactly what Beirutis do. Street signs are in Arabic and French. Government websites often include English. Menus in lots of restaurants or cafes are in all three languages, and you'll hear people switching between them. Lebanese joke that this mishmash of languages is the Lebanese mother tongue.
So when you have a Lebanese mother tongue, that means it's part of your identity in a way. Oh, this is what you are claiming to be part of your identity.
There's even a Lebanese mother tongue t-shirt. Hi, kifak, sava, it says. Greetings in English, Arabic, and French. My friend Pia calls it the bastard sentence that sums it all up.
Bastard sentence. That's nice. So enriching. That was Dalia Mortada in Beirut. And we're not going to leave there quite yet. There are always more bastard sentences. And to help find them, Nina's back.
Hey, Patrick.
We're going to test out your language advisory now, right?
Yep. So this story is from my friend Hunwa. She is from Lebanon. She grew up just outside of Beirut. And she told me the story about this sentence that was pretty amazing. When she was a little kid, about 7 or 8 years old, she remembers one day she was playing out in front of her apartment building with a bunch of other little kids. And this teenage girl came by, sat down with the kids, and then she said something. I'll actually let Hunwa explain.
Something happened, like something bad, but it wasn't like something horrible. Like maybe she chipped a nail or, I don't know, something like that. And she said, kiss me again. So you have to like stress the kiss, like kiss me again.
Kiss me again. What does that mean?
Well, we're going to get to that. But first, I was struck by the way that Hunwa described her feelings around the word.
I remember feeling like I just heard an adult expression. Because kissing was for grown-ups, I just thought, you know, this is like a grown-up thing. Kiss me again. So I actually didn't say it at that age. I probably waited a few years before I really said it.
So fast forward a few years, she's a teenager, she starts saying it all the time, you know, she drops her pen on the ground, kiss me again, she stubs her toe, kiss me again. And then she eventually moved to the United States, and she starts speaking more and more English, and nobody here says kiss me again, so she's not saying that anymore. But recently, she just became a U.S. citizen, and we were at a party to celebrate her becoming a U.S. citizen.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was really nice. And there were two friends of hers that were there that were also Lebanese. And somehow this phrase, kiss me again, came up in conversation. And they looked at her and they said,
you do realize what it means. And I said, no. And then they're like, you must know it's a swear word because of the first word, which is totally a swear word in Arabic.
Wait. Which language is she saying this in?
No, so kiss me again is English, kiss me again.
Right.
But that first word, kiss, is a bad word in Arabic.
Oh, so it's just more of this Lebanese mother tongue mixing everything up.
Right, but the expression itself is kind of a less heated way of reacting to, I don't know, stubbing your toe or something like that.
All right.
Like, what would be the equivalent in English that you would hear like an American use? Like, Damn
or the shit word. Yes.
The shit word. Oh, that word. And so, okay, so you are like a teenager. You're like, kiss me. You drop your books. Kiss me again.
It sounds so cute for a swear word, but I'm guessing it's not that cute.
No, you're thinking kiss as in the English kiss. But, you know, in Arabic, it sounds a lot more, well, dirty.
It's a vulgar word that could be used in a phrase to create insult phrases.
For you, do Arabic swear words have more power than English swear words?
Yes. Yes, they're extremely potent. I find them vulgar. They point to human body parts and actions on them. So it's like, really, it's bad.
So I suppose I do expect it to be that you have these stronger associations in your mother tongue, because those are the swear words you learn when you're young, and you know, you understand, yeah, and you understand the meaning for all of them. And then, I don't know, when you're learning a second language, it doesn't mean quite as much, and you're a little bit less responsible about your use of them. But of course, this is not like that. It's Beirut. There's more than one mother tongue.
Right, and this is exactly what I loved about this phrase, that it's like the true example of the Lebanese mother tongue. This is what living with three languages, Hunwa actually speaks four, but three languages in that city feels like on an everyday basis. It's not like you're thinking, oh, I'm speaking French now. Oh, I'm speaking English now. This is a pure example of Lebanese mother tongue. Kiss me again.
That's awesome. Okay, well, on to what we have planned. Nina, you know, we've got big plans. One of which is a series of podcasts on revitalizing minority languages. We're going to try as much as we can to cut through the cliches that I've mentioned on previous podcasts. These cliches that often surround coverage of this. And we're not always going to succeed, but we got plans, right?
Yeah, we have plans. And part of our plan is asking you guys for your thoughts, your help. And a lot of the languages that we're going to actually be covering are Native American languages. And if you have ideas, if you know someone who's revitalizing one language or another, or if you've heard of something cool, I mean, please hit us up.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just to give you an idea of some of the things that we're looking at, innovation using the internet, online dictionaries, Skype language lessons, podcasts, all of those things we're looking at and talking to people who are involved in some of these. And as a taster of some of that Native American revitalization stories, I want to tell you about a TV documentary that is actually on this month. It's about efforts to bring back the Lakota language. It's called Rising Voices / and then a word in Lakota, which I'm not going to try and pronounce.
Oh, please. Come on, try it, Patrick.
And I'm assuming that it means something like Rising Voices. And Nina, you probably know better than I do about the whole Lakota mystique. This is a tribe of Sioux Indians that included Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and... Yeah, they were the classic Hollywood Indians.
Right. I mean, but I'm interested in doing this reporting because I think what I know is probably what you know, teepees, buffalo, ceremonial dress, right. Lots of like stereotypical images of the Lakota and the Sioux people. I'm curious about more about the language, what it means to lose your language, what it means to revive your language.
Yeah, and in the Lakota case, I mean, I think they were hit really, really hard because they were seen as these Great Plains warriors. So they really had the book thrown at them by the U.S. government when they were finally defeated. They got the full treatment, the boarding schools, the dress codes, the English language, you know, 100% English. And as a result, the language, the Lakota language, it nearly vanished. Not quite, but it was really hanging on for dear life. And now the tribe is really trying to bring it back, to engage with younger people especially. And that's what this film documents. Here's some more of that fun Q&A that I played at the start of the podcast. It's a kind of fake game show.
Hey, this is You Got It. I'm Murray Lee. Today's topic is Lakota language. Let's get to our first contestants. What's your name?
Kana Marie.
Mackenzie Amachiapi.
Rosie.
Shana Johnson.
Tom.
Christine LaPointe.
Michael.
Lorna.
Ikacham Tikala Yamachiap Lakota. Angry. Little Chief.
Mato Smith.
Did anybody speak Lakota in your house?
Just really basic stuff, like Hata, to get away from that.
Ah, yeah, Lakota.
Ata Keeley.
Kind of, sort of.
Are you nuts?
Nobody.
Not no.
Aguyapi Blaska Washte Walake.
Where are you from?
Standing Rock.
Diamond River Sioux Tribe.
I was born and raised in Thunder Butte, South Dakota.
How much of the language do you need to speak to be an Indian?
A little bit.
A lot.
Lots and lots and lots. None.
A lot. I don't know, I think.
Quite a bit, I suppose.
None.
What if you used to speak the language, but you forgot it?
But I feel like you're forgetting yourself.
I don't know.
It happens.
What if you relearned it?
It'd take a couple months.
Rad.
Great. There's still many to speak with the elders.
When I see a Lakota kid that doesn't speak Lakota, I feel, you know, I am hurt from not you knowing the language.
If you speak the language, then you are an Indian.
No.
Of course not.
I think you're an Indian without it, too.
Okay, what if you don't speak the language? Are you suddenly not an Indian?
No.
Who are you?
No.
You're still a native, but no.
My tribal card says I'm an Indian, so I guess. And I don't speak it.
you don't know how to speak it, I still feel you're part of the Lakota people.
Okay, how about if you speak the language, but you also shop at Walmart and you drive a big American truck? Are you more or less of an Indian?
Depends on the kind of truck.
Maybe more.
Okay.
I don't think you're more or less.
You're still an Indian.
The Lakota people are Onshika people.
Less, yeah.
Less. Te
Hichila Walmart. What if you're white and you speak Lakota really well? Are you suddenly an Indian?
You could try to be.
You're joking.
Washichu Lakota Shni.
No.
I know a lot of people who would say they are Indian inside.
No.
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 We welcome you if you want to learn that language.
And this has been You Got It. I'm Murray Lee. Thanks for watching.
Well, that's pretty fun. How many speakers actually are there of Lakota nowadays? Patrick, do you know?
I think it's just a few thousand, which is a fraction of the total number of tribal members.
Wow.
Yeah. And just in that clip, I mean, you seem to hear quite a few of the tensions in any effort to bring back the language. You know, like, are you more Indian if you speak the language?
Right. Are you less if you don't?
Right. And how much do you open the language up to non-tribal members? And, you know, why would you trust the white man?
Right.
Anyways, the Lakota have opened up quite a bit. And they've also begun a whole host of teaching programs, whether it's kids at school in immersion programs or adults or the elderly who are being mined for their knowledge of the language, being, of course, the ones who know it the best. And now there are people who themselves, adults, who have learned the language, who are turning that around and they're teaching it to others. Here's one woman who's doing that. Her name is Nicole Walker.
I was really lost before I start working with the language, and I didn't really know what I was going to do with myself, learning the language and helping others learn the language and trying to help whenever I can.
Wiatke.
Wiatke.
Watch the stress. Wiatke.
I think there's just so much that we can learn from our own language and the fact that our language is always here with us and that we've had just this big gap where it hasn't been there. And it really kind of left us at a loss for what to do, how to conduct ourselves in our own, you know, communities with our own families. And I don't think, you know, the language is the only way that we can, you know, bring us back to being a really respectful and, you know, productive society. But I think it could help a lot.
Wow. After listening to that clip, all I can think about is just how brave it is, actually, to go from nothing to have no written text, no books, nothing, and, you know, a dwindling population of speakers, and to try and revive it from nothing. It's a really courageous act.
Yeah, and it also seems to be a kind of an act of desperation. Lakota people are not in great state. You know, there's enormous poverty on the reservation. There's drugs, there's crime. There's a lot of people in the movie you'll see. I mean, they hint at, you know, a lack of self-respect. And for some of these language activists, they want to bring that self-respect back by bringing the language back. They see that as a really key part of turning things around. Mm. Anyway, Rising Voices is going to be on this month, mainly on PBS stations. Check your local listings, as they say. It's on in a ton of cities on Tuesday, November 17th, if you happen to be listening before then or on Tuesday. It's on in Atlanta, Phoenix, Detroit, Miami, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Buffalo, Louisville, Memphis, and right here in River City, Boston. Many more places too. Tuesday the 17th. And it continues through the rest of the month in other cities as well. I'll post a link to the listings at pri.org/language. Okay, that's it, Nina.
Another pod is history.
We're on Facebook. There's a World in Words page. We're also on Twitter at LingoPod. Nina, you're at?
Porzuki, P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I.
And I'm at Patricox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. Please write us a review at iTunes or wherever you hear us. We'll be back soon.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.